Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. Today, I have my friend with us, Dan Crowther. And so, Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. Won't you please just kind of start us off by telling us a bit about yourself and then include something fun about yourself that most people wouldn't know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here. So I'm gonna start off by answering your second question, because that's a quick and easy one, and then I'll start going into my background. So I guess a fun thing about me is I love to cook, and we started a food blog back a while ago that's not active. That was an early entrepreneur goal of mine. And if I wasn't in the real estate space, construction space, where I've been for the past almost 10 years, I'd be a chef in some capacity. So that's like the, one day when I've got more free time, maybe I'll just be like full-time private chef for fun somewhere nice in the world. But anyway,
I think for fun is key there. Sorry to interject and I love that. I love eating really good food. I get frustrated with cooking, man. So I think that's awesome that you enjoy it,
I love it. And honestly, it's funny you say that. That was one of the main reasons. I always worked in restaurants all through college for a number of years. Since I was like 15, 16, I worked in restaurants. And so I was fortunate enough to eat a lot of really good food just as like a, front of house staff. And then, in college, you don't really have a lot of extra money to go to nice restaurants. So I would, fortunate enough to eat it at the restaurant. And then I figured, well, I'll learn how to cook the good food so I get to eat it, because I don't have any extra money as a college student to be able to go to these nice restaurants.
Smart.
that was kind of like the impetus of that. But you're right. That was one of the other drivers too. It was like, do I go this route or do I continue on in architecture and real estate? And unfortunately, chefs and food service, they don't make that much money. And in the real estate space, you can. So no regrets there. It's still a passion of mine for sure. I'll go through my quick background. I went to college for architecture, and my original plan, my thing was always that I was going to be an architect growing up, right? I always kind of knew that I was going to be in that world in some form or fashion. An architect was always the job. I lived in Savannah, Georgia for a number of years, went to college, Savannah College of Art and Design, lived there for a few years, hung out, had a great time. Ended up moving back to Buffalo, graduated from University of Buffalo with an architecture degree, but I had a specialization in real estate development. So I didn't get an MArch. It's a little bit different. I'm not a licensed architect. I do have a degree, but I'm not licensed. And I, in graduate school, was hired as a graduate intern by a real estate developer here in Buffalo. We do commercial real estate development, multifamily, mixed use, some commercial. And that was, before that, really didn't have much exposure into real estate development or investing or that world at all before college. It's kind of like the split, right? It's like architecture, urban planning, or real estate development. And I had a few conversations with folks, and it seemed like real estate development was more fitting for me, as like a fast paced kind of guy, hands on. So anyway, I started working for this company locally, and I've been there now for a little over 8 years, going on 9 years. And it was a great, it's been a great learning experience. It's been great exposure to the industry. I've learned a ton about real estate development, a hands-on capacity. It's a growing company. When I joined it back in 2015, it was a very small company. And so I was at the table with decision makers at the company. I was on the job site, very hands-on learning experience, being paid, a lot of people pay for that. You can get all that information now, I think, podcasts and courses and stuff like that. But, it was kind of cool. I was getting paid to learn all this stuff. And I always knew I was entrepreneurial. I've always had an entrepreneurial bend. I've always wanted to work for myself, kind of call the shots, and just, I'm a very fast paced guy, in terms of how my brain works, and knew I always wanted to kind of be a developer, be a real estate investor. But I always thought that you know, doing these big projects for the company that I worked for, you know, $5 to $20 million projects, that just didn't feel tangible to me. And so it was kind of like one day, but, and I started, I guess somewhere around 2020, when we all had a lot of free time, I started listening to a lot of podcasts, you know, and even before then, like, started to kind of get into this is probably a very similar story to a lot of folks, but started to get into the BiggerPockets world and, you know, listening to, you know, podcasts about house flipping and real estate investing, and like slowly learned that it was actually a very tangible thing. And it's actually possible for, you know, like the average guy, to do it. And beyond that, further, I've got, at the time, it was like 5 or 6 years of experience in commercial real estate development. So, whoa, I can analyze properties and I know construction and I can put a budget together. So I'm like, I can do this. You know, read Rich Dad Poor Dad. And so I was like, at that point, I guess right around 2019, 2020, all in. And you know, we did our first deal, was a house hack. It was like a live-in house hack. We lived there for 2 years and like a month, like just over 2 years. And that's important because we didn't have to pay capital gains on the sale when we sold it. And so we did well on that deal. It was like a low six-figure profit on that, and a lot of sweat equity. We kind of did a lot of the work ourselves, and the market helped. This was like 2021, I guess, I think it was. And so the market was appreciating. I'm in Buffalo, New York. And so at the time, it was in South Buffalo, and the market was hot. So that worked in our favor as well. So we had that extra money at the time, you know, made a decent profit on that first deal. And we started buying single family rentals, and we were using the BRRRR method. And at the time, we were self-funding everything. We were taking out conventional mortgages, like, you know, 30-year mortgages that we were qualifying for. So I had a pretty good W-2 job. My wife was a nurse at the time, and so we had good income. So we were taking 20%, 80% mortgages. We were self-funding the rehab out of pocket. And then we would go and either refinance out, or we would do like a home equity line of credit on the added value. And so we were buying houses for around $80,000 or so, plus or minus. And then we were putting like $30,000 in, and they would increase in value to like 155, 165. And so we'd be able to pull out almost all of our money. You know, we'd leave maybe a couple bucks in the deal. And at the time, interest rates were pretty low. So we were cash flowing. We were making like, you know, $400 a month or so. And I was like, this is great. It's not bad. And I like, my plan at the time, this was our first year of investing, so I guess it would have been 2022. I was like, I'm going to build up a portfolio of single family rentals, and then that's passive income and financial freedom, right? And then I slowly realized, like, well, you know, you got to close on the mortgage, and that takes, you know, a month or two. And then you got to do the rehab, that takes another month or two. And then you got to get your money back, that takes another month. So this is like a 4 to 6 month process. And I have all this money on the street at that point. You know, I've got like $75,000 of our cash, which, you know, young family. I was like, this is going to take me 10 years to do this, you know, because I'm at that rate. And this is before interest rates started going up. It's we're lucky now if we cash flow, you know, $150. It's more of an appreciation play when we keep stuff. And so we sort of realized at the beginning of 2023, as the interest rate environment was starting to change, and I was doing the math and kind of like planning out the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, you know, writing out the vision. I was like, I don't think this is part of the vision necessarily anymore. And so we pivoted, not 100%, but we pivoted largely into flipping houses. And so we took a similar approach in terms of like what we were buying at the time. I mean, we were buying off the MLS, and one of our first flips, it was a 2-bed that we bought in the same neighborhood, and we added a bedroom, and we bought it for about 100, and we put about 35 in, sold it for 200. And so that was a pretty good deal. And at that point, we were using institutional hard money. subbed like a hard money lender, and it was a little bit faster. You qualify faster, you close faster, you put 10% down instead of 20, and they fund the rehab. They'll fund 100% of the rehab and usually about between 85 and 90% of the acquisition. And so we had less money out. They were funding the rehab. And so we were able to move a little bit faster and kind of picked up the pace, and we're making some money. And I am part of a couple mastermind groups. And at this point I was like all in on the community, you know, like the real estate community. Like I adopted that identity. Like I'm a real estate investor at this point. We have rentals, we're flipping houses, and I'm just putting it out there, talking about it all the time. And I got connected to a private money lender through one of the communities that I'm in. And this guy's been, it's been great. It's been a great partnership, I think, for both of us. And, he funds 100% of the deals now, in return for a pretty good return. You know, it's an interest only plus a preferred return. But we're able to move fast. That was like instrumental to our ability to scale. You know, I mean, we're able to close in a couple of weeks, as quick as New York State can close on the, you know, legal side. And yeah, he'll fund 100% of the acquisition, 100% of the rehab. And so we're able to just get into these deals quick. At this point, we had a track record. And so, you know, he felt comfortable investing. I put together detailed financial analyses. And so it's, you know, we're both like, we're covered. You know, he's holding the mortgage, so there's protections for him in place as well. No different than with a hard money lender. It's kind of similar in that fashion. And yeah, that, you know, we've been recycling that money. And in 2023, we did, I guess, four deals. One deal was kind of like a project management thing, but we did four deals. And I matched my salary at my W-2 doing four deals. And maybe beat it a little bit depending on how you like really shake the numbers. If you tighten them up, between the flip proceeds and rental income as well. Cause we do have a small portfolio of rentals that we keep, and, you know, get based on that team that I've built, or I've got the lender, and now I have a crew of guys that they're not full time on the books, but I move them from job to job. You know, they're like the crew that I use. We now have we have five deals going at somewhere in the pipeline. We've got one deal that we're wrapping up construction on now. We've got a flip that we're starting. I believe it's going to start next week. We should close by the end of this month. It should be next week. I don't have exact close date. I've got another deal under contract that should close in May. That's a direct and off market, and the seller needs to find other accommodations, and then we'll close. We placed another deal under contract actually yesterday. This is a fire damage house that'll be a flip that should close within a week, and that's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then so it's, I guess, four, and then I've got one that I'm chasing that we should have a contract signed on. So yeah, set a goal for 2024 to be doing. I set the goal of doing three per quarter. Right? I'm like, if I did, you know, if I can do three per quarter, essentially one a month, I'm happy, and we're there, if not beating it right now. And so it's all about just sustaining deal flow, tightening up operations. It's all about systems. So this is it's going to be a big year of growth.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much, Dan. And so I've known you for about a year. I love the backstory. And, you know, I'm sure you've told it to me in the past, but, you know, just the fact that the way that you're wired, you kind of, you know, seem to me like somebody who is always like thinking, you're always working on, hey, how do I improve my position? Right. And so that has really, really helped you. But also, I think like maybe a bit of luck in the sense that, hey, you know, you were already in this position, then you found like real estate, right? But really, this is mostly you doing this. You know, I guess what I really love is that, okay, because I've known you for about a year, I've got to see the evolution. Because I remember when you're mostly using your money and then you got stuck and you're like, dang it, dude, I have to start using other people's money now. You reached out and you got the connection. And then boom, a little bit after that, you know, that I think sparked a thought inside of you that now you can move faster, right? And then you started using like, you know, mailers to find off market deals. Yep. I think you're still sourcing, you'll source them on the MLS if you can, I think. Right. But, yep. But you're definitely getting some, you know, off market deals through mailers. And, yep. I had a question for you. So I got to see all this, which is really cool, man. Yeah. And then for you to have done, I think you said 4 deals last year, and you matched your W-2, and then now you're looking at 4 in this first quarter. You know, boom. I mean, you are, you know, so set already to have like a huge year. So that's incredibly inspiring. And I love how you said earlier, just the average Joe can do this, right? Because you've already just in that quick, you know, background sharing with us shown how the average Joe can do that. It does take, hey, you know, we've got to put ourselves out there. But, you know, and take action. Yeah. So 2 quick questions to kind of follow up on that. This fire damage, you know, deal that you most recently locked up, I think you said yesterday, was that through mailers? If not, how did you source that one? And 2, any advice for folks who feel like they're the average Joe and are really interested in flipping, you know, what would be some advice that you could give them right now?
Yeah. So yeah, to answer the first question, the deals that we're doing right now, the one deal that we're wrapping up construction on was an MLS deal. We do still buy in the MLS in Buffalo. You can totally do it. This was it's a single family. We bought it for 75. We're going to put 35 in and I'm kind of torn between, do I keep it and refi out or do I sell it? And rates are high, which is bringing my DSCR down. And so I'm kind of like, I'm going to leave some money in it, but I could sell it. So I'm back and forth. But that's, I mean, the margin is there, you know, that should be worth at least between 150, 160 when it's done. So profit there. The other deal that we're closing on the flip is, was brought to me by a wholesaler. So this is a friend of mine locally who is also an investor. And I mean, we talk via text just every day. He's, you know, helped me a lot. He's been doing this for a number of years and is a big inspiration. He brings me deals periodically, you know, cause he'll wholesale stuff. And so he brought that deal to me. This isn't, you know, in Buffalo, we kind of have wholesalers here. There's 3 or 4 big wholesalers, but it's similar to the MLS where they'll do a showing and all the investors show up and we offer. And I've actually never bought a deal from them because every time I come in with my number and I get outbid. So I have bought deals from wholesalers. It's like relationships, you know, where he's brought me the deals. The other 2 that we're under contract on are both direct mailers. And so we started doing the direct mail back in like June, and we got one of our first deals that way. One of our first couple batches, really lucky. We were writing them. My wife and I were writing them on our kitchen, like our dining room table. Like it was like very like grassroots, I guess you could say, like Google Street View, looking for houses that were falling apart, look up the address, send them a letter. And we got honestly very lucky with one of the first couple hundred letters we sent out, landed a killer deal. And now since October, November, we've been sending out 3,000 per month with a mailing house. And so I still source the list on, I use PropStream as the software I use. And, I source that list and I send over a spreadsheet and they do everything. So we're paying, it's less than $1. It's like 80 cents a letter. And yeah, we're doing 3,000. And so that's landed us now 3 deals. So it's, you know, it pays for itself. And then, yeah. Yep. So to answer your question, yeah, those other 2 deals are direct mail. So it definitely works, you know, and we've found kind of like some of the tactical, like it's somewhere between plus or minus 4,000 letters will get you a deal, you know, but we're getting good responses. And some sellers, you know, they want a lot and it's not always the right fit, you know, for a cash buyer. And honestly, I always will tell them that. I'm like, honestly, I, you know, our business model is we buy distressed properties and, you know, we'll come in and we'll renovate them. We're typically looking for some sort of physical distress, you know, where that might not be retail ready, the house. And so, you know, we want to make sure it's a win-win situation for both of us. We want you to walk away. We're looking for how sellers that have equity, right? If somebody's got a $150,000 mortgage on a, you know, $160,000 house, it's probably not the right fit, you know, because we're just not going to be able to be competitive. And so it's a win-win. And I'm very honest and friend, you know, direct. It's kind of like wholesaling. There's wholesalers out there that do this as their only business. And I mean, off market real estate is sales and marketing, you know, and then, you know, the flipping is when you bring in the construction and the real estate kind of like development analysis, to it. So yeah, I mean, that kind of like leads into the second half of your question. Like, what advice would I have for somebody? I think I was, again, fortunate to work for a real estate developer and be on construction sites for a number of years, you know, with a hard hat on, and like really see, like, I mean, just like kind of like baptism by fire, you know, like get my hands dirty early. Like so when I started doing our own, you know, my own investments, I had a number of years of experience on construction sites with budgets and estimating and a deal analysis. And I brought a lot of that approach to how I invest, you know? And so I like to think we have pretty sophisticated financial models, and I build out a pretty sophisticated construction budget, and you know, stuff happens, but I try to keep numbers very tight. And again, just fortunate to have that background going into real estate, you know, and for that reason, I'm an operator, you know, and I'm able to do these deals with other people's money because there's a track record and there's experience. And I think for anybody can do this. And I think that, you know, I right now project manage all of my own deals. I project manage all of our deals, right? I'm doing all the analysis and on site. I have a good contractor now who is a GC, and he's able to do a lot. I've been able to get out of the weeds, so to speak. I was able to run all that at the beginning. I think for somebody who might have a back, you know, doesn't have this background, I think the analysis is, you know, the deal analysis is not that hard to learn. You know, real estate, especially with flipping and kind of like, you know, the single family BRRRR rentals, it's all pretty simple. I don't want to oversimplify it. I don't like that sounds like, oh, it's easy. It's not. But it's sort of like, you know, if you know how to run a comparable analysis, you know, it's like, what did the last six houses sell for? And then take the average comparable houses, you know, if it's a 3-1, like, what did the last six houses sell for within, you know, a half mile of your house that were the same beds and baths? And then take the average, and that's probably your after repair value. That's going to be right around what your house should sell for. And then you want to take 70-75%, depending on, you know, how aggressive you want to be, of that ARV. And that's kind of like your discount to account for profit and realtor fees and all that stuff. And then you subtract out your rehab cost. And that's maybe the hardest part, you know. I mean, we've gotten pretty good at that, just having come from that world and having done a number of deals now. But there's so many sources where you can learn how to, you know, kind of quickly analyze construction budgets. For us, it's usually around $40 a square foot is like a good starting point, you know, all the way up to 60, 70, maybe, you know, this fire damage house will probably be closer to $80 a square foot, just because it's, you know, it's really smoke damage, not fire. So it's not like a structural damage, but yeah, that's kind of like the starting point. So I guess long answer to your question to get back on track is for somebody who doesn't necessarily have that experience, like, you know, running budgets or running construction jobs, I think that having a good GC, general contractor, to start walking these with you is critical. You know, it's critical because they're gonna help you. Initially, I mean, when you first start walking houses, when you first start walking deals, like, they're going to point out big cost drivers. It's like, the roof looks bad, the water heater's old, those are horizontal cracks in the wall in the basement, like, there's water down here, so we're going to need drain tile, there's no sump pump, so we've got to put a sump pump in. You know, these joists look like they're sagging a little bit, you know, the floor is a little bit slanted. This is all fixable stuff, you know, but those are cost drivers. That's all going to be. And that's where you're like, if you think you're going to go in and, you know, full gut rehab a house for $25,000-$30,000, if it's super cosmetic and you got lucky and found a killer deal that's just cosmetics, awesome, you know, but, you want to be able to see those things, and a contractor is going to help you. And then when you get into like the operations of the deal, the contractor is going to be the one to help you understand, you know, what sort of material lists do you need to put together? Like, you need this much flooring, you need this much drywall, because you don't want to over or under order, and you want to budget correctly. So I think that's really like the first teammate I would suggest somebody bring in if they don't necessarily have construction experiences. Once you've educated yourself on deal analysis and kind of like deal sourcing, find a good GC if you don't have that background, because they're going to help you.
Yeah, they'll help you with the whole process, right? And sorry to cut you off. I got a question there. And, you know, this is awesome because this is like such a valuable, you know, interview right here, because essentially what you're giving us is like a mini masterclass on how to flip homes, right? So I've got two questions. One, you know, would you have any advice on sourcing a good GC? And two, would you actually recommend sourcing your GC at the same time that you are beginning to learn, you know, how to underwrite or analyze the deal with the, you know, budget and all that, right?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, with general contractors, I think you should educate yourself first, you know, because GCs, like these guys really aren't, I'm just speaking in generalities, but they're typically not going to be, I'm trying to think of the right way to put it. While you're learning, they're not necessarily going to help you with analysis. There's tons of GCs. I don't want that to come off like who do deals and who own properties and who do this. And if you can find that guy, awesome partner, like keep that person very close. But most contractors are field guys, you know, like they kind of want like, tell me what to do and I'm going to do it. And I'll help you under, you know, it's like once you give them the scope of work, they'll be like, okay, here's the scope of work. And I, you know, help me understand how much flooring I need and how much drywall I need. And they'll point out issues. But you want to come in having a good understanding of like deal analysis first. Like they're not going to help you with the analysis. And these guys are busy too. You know, they don't want to necessarily like, you don't want to waste their time and you don't want to ask too much from them. At that point, I think it would be better. I think it'd be more beneficial for somebody to get close to another investor, you know, to find another, a mentor, you know, another investor who can help you with that. You know, it's like an investor who might have that background, like they're going to be able to help you with both of those things. But a contractor, you really want to, I think, approach a contractor once you're ready to take down your first deal. Once you feel really comfortable with analysis and make sure you're ready to take it down, because you don't want to like walk 10 houses with a GC and then never pull the trigger. And at that point he's wasted 10 hours or more. And he's going to be like,
he'll never return your call.
What's going on, man? It's like, you know, pooper, get off the pot. Like, let's
yeah,
get here.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, I would definitely get that, like get close to a mentor, educate yourself, get to the point where you feel comfortable. Analysis paralysis are a real thing. You know, it took us about a year till we finally pulled the trigger. And once we did, you realize it's not that scary, you know, it's always
and actually
scary.
Right. Like, I think, you know, if we're not having fear about these, you know, working towards our dreams, then we're not dreaming big enough, or there's maybe something wrong with us. Right. We might need therapy. Right. Yeah, I think, and what I was going to say is like 1 year in analysis paralysis is actually pretty short, man. People will sit there for 5-10 years. So kudos to you for, again, taking action. And, yeah, I love that. So, when interviewing GCs, is there anything that you kind of like look for? And then I want to circle back and I've got a question about mentors and coaches and your thoughts on those.
Yeah. That was the other question. With GCs, I mean, for me, I've used a couple different ones and, I have, you know, I don't just use GCs. I use a lot of subcontractors too. And so I don't personally, because I project manage a lot of our deals, I do have a contractor who's doing most of the work and can pull the permits, but we still bring in a lot of subs. You know, we bring in an electric sub, usually a plumber. We'll bring in a drywall guy, bring in a painter, you know, if there's basement work that needs to be done. And I will still run all those guys. I'll still, you know, put those contracts together and everything like that. I think with a good contractor, any contractor, whether it's a GC or a subcontractor, I think you want to, you know, at this point you understand enough of the deal that you've put a pretty good scope of work together, and you want to make sure that they're giving you like good detailed quotes back that are kind of like itemized out, and they're addressing all the issues. You know, it's like, and if you want to break it out, materials and labor, I provide all the materials on our jobs, but you know, maybe you want the plumber or whatever to provide the materials to, just, you know, if you don't have the plumbing knowledge to know exactly what pipes, and I typically will have the plumbers bring their own materials in. It's just easier. But yeah, you want to get itemized quotes. You want them to be, you know, certainly responsive, and, you know, if you're pulling permits, of course you want to make sure they're licensed, and generally professional. I mean, I'll give a quick little like anecdotal example is I was getting quotes. I always get like 2 to 3 quotes for everything. And I had a contractor coming in to give me a price on like a kitchen. He wasn't doing electric or plumbing, but he was doing like the millwork and the flooring, cabinets installed, the flooring, and stuff like that. And he pulls up in a, like a pickup truck, no marking, no brand, nothing. It was like him and his buddy, sweatpants on. They smelled like a pound of weed. I was just like, I'm not going to hire these guys. They're like the opposite of professional. And so you don't want that. You want some level of professionalism. You want them to be able to help you understand, you know, like when you're asking questions about materials, right? It's like, can you help me, you know, put together a material list? They should be able to help you with that. And yeah, I mean, you just want, you know, those detailed scopes of work. You want insurances, you want, licenses, and you're going to probably go through a couple before you figure out, you know, the best guy to work with. But yeah, I hope that answered the question.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Thank you so much. And, you know, so, here's my next question for you. If I remember correctly, you've got a few mentors that are, you know, quite a few, you know, levels ahead of you, right? Or steps ahead of you. How important would you say it is to work with a mentor? And do you have a coach? Do you work with coaches? And yeah, just share with us, please, any insights that you learned from, you know, building those relationships.
Yeah, I don't have a coach. This year I'm seriously considering, you know, hiring like a one-on-one, like a, you know, business coach to help with the business and just with mindset in general. I am part of 2 masterminds. You know, I'm a member of Action Academy, and I'm also in a GoBundance mastermind, GoBundance Emerge. And they've both been super helpful with, just with like general mindset and like, just, I mean, like your network, net worth is your network, right? I mean, it's like you're gonna be like the average of the 5 people that you spend the most time around. And I, you know, I don't necessarily have a mentor per se. I do. There's an investor here locally, and he is kind of like, I guess, a bit of a quasi mentor. He's been flipping houses for a number of years and has a good sized portfolio, and I bounce stuff off him all the time, you know, and I think what's been the most helpful with regard to, you know, that individual, and just other people in these other mastermind groups, you know, there's like guys who are doing way bigger things than me, and just other people that, like, you know, I look up to, you know, house flippers, like, who are, you know, pretty well known, like, you know, influencer style, like, they're doing like 100 houses a year, whatever, even like 50 houses a year, is that when you're around those people, that normalizes it. And so for me, when I first started, I'm like, man, I want to, you know, I hope we can like flip a house or two this year. And now that I'm around these people who are much higher level, you know, you want to get in the bigger rooms of people who are, you know, have that net worth, have that 7 or 8 figure net worth, and they're doing, you know, they're 2 or 3 steps ahead of you. That normalizes it. And so what that did for me in my brain is that I'm now thinking, like, if I'm not flipping 3 or 4 houses at a time, I'm behind. Like, I got to catch up. Like, that's normal. What they're doing is normal. You know, like, I'm behind. And you got to be careful and not beat yourself up. You know, it's like the gap in the gain. Like, you know, compare yourself to where you were last year. Like, I don't beat myself up over that. I use it as motivation, because I'm constantly thinking, like, I always want to be in kind of like uncharted territory for myself. You know, like, if it's not new, I'm not on the right track, you know? And so that's like right now, and having those mentors is what's going to help you, right? Because you get there, it's like having a guide, right? It's like, now that I'm doing these deals, like, I've got my buddy here who can send contractors over all the time. Like, he handles all the listings. Like, I mean, I'm able to bounce stuff off you guys all the time. And it just, like, that, having that support system and those other, you know, it's community. So it's not so much mentors, but it's like community. Like, you definitely want to have those mentors, and they don't even have to be like individuals that you call or text every day. It's like, it's okay. I think those people are important, but I think it's okay to even like find a couple people on Instagram who are like, you know, Cam Cathcart's one example of, they, you know, that's his name. They've got They flip, I think it's St. Louis. They flip houses in St. Louis, but I've always admired their Instagram account because they built the business that I want, right? They're like, I don't know, flipping like 30 to 60 houses a year and are very successful. And so I look at, you know, I consume a lot of their content on Instagram and I'm like, well, that's my goal, right? That's where I'm trying to go. And so, yeah, that's, I think, where mentors are going to be helpful because it's going to normalize where you want to go. And then you're going to start getting there. You reverse engineer it. It's a longer conversation. You know, it's a lot of the stuff we've put into place in Action Academy. You start mapping out your year and all the inputs. And yeah, having the community for accountability and support and questions. You know, I don't want to at all come across like I have figured it out. I'm not figured it out. You know, I mean, we just go, you know, I just know that like massive action will yield, you know, massive results. But I pose questions all the time, you know, about off-market deals and, you know, tactical stuff, you know, with regard to like construction or deal now all the time, you know, so having that community, and you never know what perspective that somebody else is going to bring, you know, whether they've been doing it for a month or 10 years.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, as we are being pulled forward by working with our, you know, mentors and folks that are, you know, crushing it around us, we also want to be, you know, sharing our information, sharing our knowledge with those that are like up and coming, which you're really good at. So we're, just so the audience knows, we're in a pod together, you know, accountability pod in the Action Academy. And you are always like sharing super valuable information. And at the same time, you're asking questions, and it's both like ways, like we can help people while we are being helped, and that's how it all works, you know? And I really love that, like, law of reciprocity. As we are getting close to wrapping up here, I've got just two more questions for you. So one, you know, how can our audience support you? Is there a particular type of deal they can send your way if they're looking? And so how can our audience support you / connect with you? And then, you know, I'll hold off to the last question in a minute here.
Yeah. I mean, my Instagram account, I wish I was more active. That's definitely something that I'm not great at. I consume content, I don't create a lot of it. But daniel.r.crowther, we can link that in the show notes or whatever. Is a good way to connect, or Facebook, but Instagram's good. And then, in terms of support, you know, our deal flow has increased. I mean, we're sourcing a lot of deals ourselves, but, we're always open. I'm in an Erie and Niagara counties, in Western New York, primarily right now in Erie and Niagara counties. So we're always open to off-market opportunities here. You know, on the single family flip side or small multifamily as well, you know, for a value add. So we always open to look at anything, you know, and I always tell our sellers that we do give referrals. I've paid out, we do $1,000 referral. So if somebody connects us to a seller and we end up closing, I'll give $1,000 referral. One of our off market actually, sellers connected me with another seller. So we haven't closed on that deal yet. I'm still working on it, but I did tell her if we end up closing that we'll do the referral. So that's out there. And then we're always also looking for capital partners who are interested in funding deals. And I work with a few now. And the way that we structure it is the investors, capital partners that we work with will bring 100% of the acquisition and the renovation cost. In return for 12% annual interest only plus a 5% preferred return. And that's, the terms are, we usually do like a 6 to 9 month term, and we're able to disposition those between 4 to 6. And so what that equates to is somewhere between a 9 and an 11 or 12% return on total principal in a couple months. So it's been a good deal. You know, I pivoted away from institutional money, hard money, as I, you know, hard, private money is, you know, it's generally, it's quicker. And I mean, quite frankly, I prefer to work with individuals than banks, you know, and this is, these are relationships, you know, the deals that we're doing were, you know, ideally I want that investor to be happy. to make money, and I want them to recycle, you know, the money back into the next deal and continue to make money. You know,
that's so you take really good care of them. It's win-win, which is smart.
I do. Yeah, I try to. I mean, I think I do. I'm super transparent, very communicative. All these investors have access to a Google Sheet where everything's tracked. I mean, it's very. We take photos and upload them all the time. So yeah, it's a very transparent, but yeah, I try to. I don't want it to be like a, I mean, when you're the steward of somebody's money, you know, you want to make sure that you're taking really good care of them. You're being communicative. You want them to make money while, you know, you are. It's a win-win situation. All of our investors hold mortgages on the property. So they hold first lien position. So they're protected, you know, additionally insured. And so we do that protection, you know, but yeah, for me, it's all, I want it to be a relationship that I'm building with that investor. Right now it's debt. And I mean, we also have equity opportunities in multifamily properties that we look at. So, yeah, I'm always open to connecting with any capital partner or investor who's interested in learning about, you know, what kind of short-term capital returns they can get on deals here in Buffalo. Because our market's hot. I don't know if you guys knew. I'm going to plug Buffalo really quick at the end, but it's a cold, snowy place. And, you know, our football team brings a lot of bad feelings year after year. But from a real estate perspective, we were recently, Buffalo market was recognized as Zillow's number one housing market in 2024. And that's it's due to a blend. Affordability is huge here. You know, like your median sale price is like 250,000, 248, I think it is the exact number. That's very affordable, even as rates stay kind of sticky. You know, I think rates are going to stay, you know, probably for most of this year and in the sixes, sevens, you know, with rates being high, your, you know, mortgages are still relatively affordable here. We've got a super stable, economy, job market. There's a lot of state employees, tons of healthcare, lots of higher education. Our unemployment rate's like somewhere around 3. And there's quite frankly not a ton of inventory. And so, you know, if you're doing what we do, which is buying distressed houses and bringing quality houses to market, and we're not flipping luxury homes, we're flipping entry level homes. You know, we're typically doing like, it's basically usually it's a 3-1 or a 3-1.5. You know, and we like to keep it under to like 2,500 square feet so that it's a super attainable entry level home. And, you know, I've talking with the investors who all the investors we work with are out of this market, you know, none of them are from Buffalo, but they recognize that. And I've heard that too, without pushing it. So, yeah, it's a good place to invest, right now. And we're very hopeful and optimistic that 2024 is going to be a really good year for the market. And so we're like poised for growth.
and I love it. Yeah. And I feel really good about 2024 in general, but especially, you know, when it comes to real estate investing. And again, thank you so much for your time, Dan. Really appreciate it. That's literally a mini masterclass on how to get started flipping. There's some great, you know, valuable points that you brought up there. Before we totally wrap it up, I'd love to, you know, just give you the chance to share anything, any advice, anything else that is on your mind, you know, that you want to share with the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, in addition to anybody wanting to connect, look to talk about, you know, partnership opportunities. If there's anybody with specific questions, you know, or just like questions, advice, anything like that, reach out. I am probably I always want to help. You know, I think you can probably tell, like I like this stuff a lot. I can talk about it for a while, and I generally do like talking about it and helping. You know, I had a call with somebody actually just before this podcast, just talking about it. They were thinking about getting into house flipping and had some questions. And we talked about it for 30, 40 minutes, you know. So if anybody does want to connect on that, we'll put the Instagram account in. And yeah, reach out, because I'm more than happy to help or talk about it. Still, again, I've not totally figured this out. I don't want to like suggest that, like, you know, we're master house flippers over here. But I've just learned a ton. You know, I took advantage of exactly that and just listened to as many people who've done it and put that into action. And yeah, the only other thing I would share is do it. just go out there and do it. I mean, whatever you're thinking about doing, just pull the trigger. Cause you know, we were in analysis paralysis for about a year and I analyzed some properties and, you know, some of them seemed like they worked. And once I pulled the trigger on that first property, it was just like, it all worked out. You know, I mean, it just, we ended up getting a contractor in and he did a really good job and we stayed on budget. And when Y went out to do that refinance and the bank cut me a check, I was like, man, this works. Like it's wild to see how once you start, the momentum will pick up. And so you just got to pull the trigger and do it, you know?
I love that. What I wanted to say is anybody who is interested in, you know, reaching out to Dan, just do it like right now. Right. So what he said is what he shared with us today, he's still like fairly new relatively in, you know, flipping homes, but he's made money on every single deal. So Dan knows what he's doing. He's very good at it. Absolutely. You know, and I would highly recommend, you know, reaching out to them. I can totally second what you said, where you always want to help. That is the truth about you 100%, man. And again, yeah. I really appreciate your time. With that, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. Thank you all for listening or watching. And I hope you have an amazing rest of your day.
Thanks. It was fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.